Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well met, fellow adventurers. We are back with Sir Croakington, and we are back in Proving Ground 6. Time for the Path to Cardson, Part 1. We shall begin. At the conclusion of the previous part, at the back of the cave you find the familiar, black, pulsing vortex that time and again faithfully bore you to and from the perilous shores of Sarngard. You linger for a few minutes before the portal, listening intently to the sound of the forest outside, eager to hear anything that would suggest your companions are nearby. When it becomes apparent to you that you are alone, you quickly decide that your best course of action is to return to Trind Keep. After taking one final look around at the gloomy interior of the cave, you step towards the swirling portal. Just like that, then? The voice from behind you, barely above a whisper, startles you, causing your heart to skip a beat. You spin around to confront whoever's at your back, but there is no one here. Here. The voice, this time you're right, is louder, clearer, and instantly recognisable. You turn to find yourself face to face with Owl. The Master Thief regards you with suspicious, unfriendly gaze. I nearly gave up on you, he says. Your friend the Sorceress did give up. But to be fair, she did wait around for the better part of 2 days. Confused, you ask Owl what he means. You never arrived here with us, he says, still regarding you with obvious suspicion. The caster said you were lost. The attempt to teleport the three of us was too bold. We appeared right outside this cave. She said we would. But you never did. Gone 5 long days, my friend. And it's put us in a bit of a rough spot. And now, without disclosing much of anything about the 4 grim visions you experienced while being teleported, you craft an account of your trial, starting at the exact moment Uria began to summon her magic, and concluding with your reunion with Owl in the dark hollow at the back of this hidden cave. Master Thief sighs and quickly apologizes for what he said previously. There's as precious little time as there is, he says. This delay has cost us more than we might be able to afford, and it's put me a bit on edge. For it's wrong for me to find fault over something out of your control. The Sorceress might have been able to save us a long trek, but apparently she had matters more important elsewhere. We best not waste any more time, though. As it is, we may already be too late. Owl tells you that he fears for the safety of the Wabbling Carson, as he fears much of what Tumwithilia, one of the two sister sorceresses you encountered on Swinow, might indeed prove true. Unless we're able to get the code contained in the journals back to Carson, there isn't much point in any of this, he says. The battle we hope to bring to the Grand Century will die in its infancy, and with it, the hope of a city long held under a black spell. Recording Owl's previous words regarding Thane Mazabak, withhold your judgment of the Thane. All three bear marks common to a particular calamity from years back. This I have heard, and this I choose to believe. Sinister and steeped in mystery through the mass Thane might seem, I do not doubt that he stands closer to our ranks than to those of our enemy. Until we're able to pierce together what his purpose on the Isle is, and has been, we should not concern ourselves with it. We must assume he is combating the long arm of our enemy. There are those in his court who have dutifully kept me apprised of events. You ask the thief what it is he knows, or surmises, regarding the Masked Thane. The two masked sorceresses, and the connection between Carden and Sarngard Isle. They're quite connected, he says, his shrewd eyes staring down the length of his crooked nose. Somewhere on this isle is a massive quantity of this. He once again produces several shards of raven bone, holding up the fragmented mineral pieces for you to see. Began months ago. As just a series of faint whispers passed on to me by members of the Wabble, who had infiltrated the court of the Grand Century. Six brave men hanged at the Citadel gates, only days after their indiscretion. Their whispers led us to the coded journals and to the plans of the Grand Century to acquire an epic load of raven bone. For where and for what purpose, we did not then know. It was plain enough now that his gaze was drawn to Sarngard. Presumably a lot of the things I've been fighting on Sarngard are linked to that. Not everything. For example, the goblins and the trolls, they're just fighting because that's where they live. And they'd rather not have humans go around ruining it. And, you know, probably killing them all in the process. And there's probably other schemes and plots going on there, because it's Sarngard. There were always schemes and plots. Owl's eyes narrow, and he suddenly asks you about the wounds you've explored in the bog, in the jagged hills of Sarngard Isle. Realization he knows more about your exploits than you previously guessed instinctively causes you to assume regarded to media. The Master Thief seems to sense your uneasiness, but nevertheless repeats his pointed inquiry, asking you specifically about the throne you found in the depths of the ruins. And once you are able to vividly recall the ornate, high-backed ashwood chair, adorned with iron inlays along its arms and across its sides. You also remember the vision you had in the presence of the throne. A walled city with thick plumes of black smoke rising over its battlement looms into view, taking shape amidst a vast and lush forest. Broad arcs of lightning cut across the sky above the city. With each blinding flash, the towering and sinister silhouettes of three figures are plainly visible. Alright, sinister silhouettes of three figures? Is that the Grand Sentry and the two sisters, perhaps? because they are certainly sinister. You suddenly realize you've been talking aloud, and have relayed your recollection of the throne and the vision you had to Al. He seems unaffected by your words, and merely nods when you abruptly end your account. I've seen four others like it, he says, obviously referring to the throne. Grand wooden thrones, tucked away in remote places, each undeniably similar to the others. I can only guess with regards to their purpose and history. Though I'm certain neither you nor I would find the truth to our taste. Owl pauses and turns to glance at the swirling portal that hovers against the back wall of the cave. I too saw the throne in the ruins, he says. Purin sent me to the bog while you were pressed with other matters. I dared not get too close to it. However, for I knew all too well the sinister power they possessed. Instead, I left and returned to the keep, where I found myself run afoul of some of his more dutiful guardians, and bound up in the cell in which you found me. Intrigued by Al's tale about the four other wooden thrones he's seen, he asked him where he found them. In a cave in the hills east and north of Crowdrop, he says. There's one in a hidden chamber, in a lair that can be accessed through the sewers in Trithic. Well, we can check up on that one at least, if this portal even works. There's another Phaladon, and the ruins of a tower high in the mountains. Owl falls silent and appears to be listening intently to the sounds of the forest that echo through the cave. After nearly a minute's silence, he again speaks, his softly uttered, revelation-bearing words send a chill the length of your spine. The fourth I discovered only 2 years ago, he says, in the hall of the Grand Sentry. The very chair upon which the Sorcerer Lord of Cardson sits is a throne of Alderwood. So, the Grand Sentry's throne is what this is all about. And apparently with this, the throne is, if anything, more sinister than the guy who sits upon it. Your mind reels beneath the weight of Owl's sudden and profound revelations. You immediately begin to ponder the connection between those whose faces are concealed by high wooden masks, Thane Mazabak, the Grand Sentry of Cardson, and the two sorcerers you've encountered on Shrine Art, what happened to them? And the five wooden thrones that the companion claims to have discovered. It's the kindling for some sleepless nights, says Al, as he senses the sinister conclusions you're attempting to draw. I only wish I had time enough to slip into Stonemarsh and see what sort of chair that could Thane affords his backside. Through mind that I still maintain that his implication in this is something other than what it seems. Stonemarsh, of course, I'll just click the link. Stonemarsh. Oh no, that's just about Thane Mazabak again. And well, yeah, he has a long entry. I'll read it. The mysterious but extremely influential Thane Mazabak is arguably second only to the king with regard to the power he wields in the kingdom. From just below the for his eyes to the bottom of his chin, his face is concealed behind a black wooden mask. Most believe that this odd facial accoutrement hides a disfigurement he obtained early in life. Though there are many who think it disguises something more sinister. There are also many who have long suspected the middle-aged Fane possesses potent magical ability. Though such suspicions have never been proven, and no official doubt has been levied upon Mazabak, it is forbidden by law for Tyson Thanes and Tyson monarchs to possess magical abilities. Well, I guess that pass closed to Sir Crokington then. By all accounts, Thane Mazabak is an exceptional warrior, who first came to prominence as the man who united many of Tyson's northern militias to defeat the mountain goblin tribes that long ravaged the kingdom's rugged frontier. His leadership and valour earned him high praise and won him the admiration of King Renwald, who upon the death of Thane Yndrith made Mazabak heir to the lofty title. Upon becoming Thane, Mazabak took up residence in the ancient and grim fortress of Stone Marsh, the northeastern corner of the kingdom. Mazabak maintains the largest standing fighting force of all of Tysus Thanes, as he oversees the defence of the kingdom's northeast and eastern frontiers. Many have criticised Thane Mazabak for what they perceive as unbridled ambition, and there has been more than once one voice, some even within the king's court, who raised concerns over the size of the army he commands. Despite such rumblings, Mazabak seems to have retained the favour of King Renwald, who considers him a staunch defender of the kingdom and a trusted and honourable ally. Thane Mazabak's most recent endeavour has taken him to Shangard Island, where he's assumed the daunting task of overseeing and rebuilding Shangard Keep and commanding the soldiers who wage a brutal battle against the savage troll and goblin tribes that dominate much of the island. His critics have been quick to denounce his latest move as another of the Thane's supposed grabs for power, though many would conclude that his experience in such matters and his proven success is the reason he has replaced the man who, for nearly a year, led the effort to retake the Isle, the lauded Tyson Army Commander, General Tarakin. At length, though I still maintain its implication in all of this is something other than what it seems, at length decided that to waste any further time here is pointless, and the two of you prepare at once to resume your trek to Carton. Owl remains hopeful the delivery of the coded journals and his small cache of Wavering Bone will be enough to allow the rabble and his allies to defeat the magic of the Grand Sentry that has long held the city in its fearsome grip. As you step towards the swirling portal that hovers against the back wall of the cave, you are certainly mindful of your promise to Arthrok to return to the Isle at the conclusion of this business. The words of the huntsman echo clearly in your mind, as if you were speaking them over your shoulder. You must promise to return here, no matter what. I will wait for you, Sir Crokington, no matter what befalls this place. As you follow Owl into the spinning black vortex, your promise to Arthur again sounds in your mind, rising above the din of your churning thoughts. It's a promise you pray you'll be able to keep. You return to Twinned Keep via the portal and ultimately to Twythick occurs without incident. Less than 12 hours after departing from the Swords of Sarngard, you find yourself lurking in the shadows near the city's main gates, in violation of the curfew. Again, as you and Owl prepare to slip out of the Adderstone under the cover of night, the arrival of a small caravan of wagons, the occupants eager to find themselves behind the walls of the Witherport, provides enough distraction to the guards to allow you and Owl to make your exit without being seen. In the stable at the back of the Ramshackle Inn, not far from the city. Owl procures two horses, leaving a pouch of gold in each of their places to greet their owners in the morning. Punishable by death, you know, he says, casting a wide glance in your direction as the two of you lead your newly acquired steeds onto the winding road that wanders south of Twythick. With the starless, unbroken ceiling of muddled black high above, and the chill winds sweeping out of the north, whispering less than friendly sentiments at your backs, you and Owl embark on the first leg of the long trek to Cardson. The first part of your journey takes you to the northern shores of Moonlyre Lake, south and east of Twythick, where you and Owl make arrangement for a passage aboard a barge across the lake and then continue south on the wither twinned towards Barrow Lock. You plan to disembark at a town called Long Sward. Your plans abruptly change only 3 hours into the voyage across the dark, mirror-like surface of the vast lake. You're the first to spot the two Chilterics circling high above the drifting barge against the clear blue morning sky. You quietly tow out, and he shakes his head and mutters something. He then has a quick word with the bardmaster. He'll set us down at a town called Hawkmarsh, a mile or two south of here, he says. Let's just hope our two admirers keep their affections at a distance. No one aboard has seen them yet. Try not to draw any attention to them. The next 2 miles aboard the barge pass painfully slowly, but more importantly, uneventfully. I'm guessing they are waiting for me to lead them to somewhere. As the owl draws up to one of the several long piers that extend out into the lake from Hawkmarsh's small harbour, you and owl waste no time, leading your horses across the boarding plank and off the ship. The barge master attempts to repay owl a portion of the fare as agreed upon, but the master thief politely refuses. Have a safe passage, he calls over his shoulder as he takes the reins and leads his horse off the pier. Well, the barge master is just lucky that his boat didn't get burninated. You follow suit, and the two of you are once again on your way, riding south out of Hawkmarsh, on a winding forest road that snakes along the western shore of Moonlyre Lake, on the rusted gates of the ancient cemetery. For an ancient cemetery, no more than a mile south of the town, you stop and confer with each other about what should be your next course of action. You're somewhat taken aback when Owl promptly suggests that you split up. It's too dangerous for us to travel together, he says, continually glancing up at the sky through the canopy of gnarled branches that span the road. Too tempting a target. If those two managed to get us, and make no mistake about it, they eventually would. So all the hope we carry was just gone in one fell swoop. Stroke. We cannot continue together. You immediately see the sense in his argument and agree. Owl nods and strokes the back of his horse as he pauses for a moment, apparently lost in thought. When he next speaks, he tells you he will head east and south and make for the city of Trindmore on the western edge of Barrow Lock. I haven't thought of it before now. There may be someone in Trindmore who can see her way to helping us, he says. It will sufficiently divide us. And from there, I can make great haste to where we will again meet. Bear Path Lodge is a tavern and inn, something of a huntsman's abode in the hills northwest of Cardson. Owl tells you the lodge is safe, and its proprietor, a man by the name of Orlon, is both a friend and an ally of the Wabble. I'll describe for you the location of Bear Path Lodge, and he'll convince you'll be able to find it with little difficulty. Then tells you the best way to reach the lodge is to traverse the path of Meltar, which runs south out of Fainvale and skirts the foothills of Northern Swift's tallest peak. Well, there's a lore link for Meltar. The tallest peak in Northern Swift is the towering Mount Meltar. This mountain is the tallest of the three lofty peaks of the arm of Meltar Spur of the Fedwin Range. The mountain was named after the ancient king of the fire giants Meltar, whom the god Sivak is said to have slain during a war in the cosmos just before the creation of time. And a long-standing legend has it that there was a maze somewhere at the heart of Mount Meltar, and that anyone able to find it and successfully transverse the many powers it contains will discover Meltar's tomb and the untold riches it contains. An arm of Meltar? This southern spur, the Fadwin Range, is home to three of Swift's tallest peaks, Mount Meltar, Mount Mirith, and Mount Mirror. These towering, treacherous peaks fold many of those who have attempted to cross them, and have invoked a popular saying among the people of the North Broadlands. That's the arm of Meltar, which signifies that something is difficult or impossible. Once you come out of the lodge, you're no more than a day or two at most. Out of the pass, you're no more than a day or two at most from the lodge, he tells you. I recommend you travel the pass only at night, despite any risks it might entail. It's likely to be watched by day. Your respective courses are agreed upon, and now it wishes you luck and tells you to do whatever it takes to protect the journey you possess. He tells you that he will do the same. The two of you ride on together for a couple of miles to the road fork south and east. Owl turns his gaze along the eastern fork. I'll see you at Bear Path Lodge within the month, he says, manoeuvring his horse alongside yours, initiating a shoulder cross. Goodbye and good luck. You echo his sentiments, and with that, the two of you ride off in different directions, ultimately bound for the same destination. Your travel south proves swift and largely uneventful, resulting in what you consider to be remarkable progress towards reaching your final destination. You pass out of the hilly region west to the west of Moonlight Lake and into a more forested portion of the kingdom that sits just north of Fainvale. While spending a night in a town called Wild Hollow, you learn the region for which you're travelling have recently become overwhelmed with bandits, and even a few goblins have ventured boldly out of their lairs in the Fedwin foothills. The very next day, not more than 10 miles from Windhollow, you encounter a band of four-shade goblins. The vicious humanoids turn and flee upon catching sight of you, lead you to believe they're seeking targets far easier than yet you present. Still, the encounter serves to warn you of the dangers inherent in travelling through the wilds, even on patrolled roads. So when you learn from a passing traveller that a regiment of border rangers has recently taken up residence at an old outpost several miles to the south, you decide to attempt to spend the night in the company of those who certainly harbour no affection for highwaymen or goblins. The distance to the outpost seems greater than that which the travel indicated, but at last, as the shadows of late afternoon are beginning to deepen, You spot a stone tower standing at the white side of the road just up ahead. A long stone building extends into the overgrown clearing behind the tower. And from the top of this structure, two small chimneys pump the pungent but welcoming aroma of wood smoke into the crisp air. You're thankful to have reached a border ranger outpost. As you ride up to the tower, you're greeted by a man clad in a leather hauberk, who's busily scraping rusty scale out of the bottom of a heavy iron pot. Can't hope for much of a stew with something like this, the ranger frowns, turning the pot towards you, revealing a hopelessly corroded interior. Where are you headed, friend? When it's revealed that not only are you a border ranger, but also the renowned adventurer Sir Croakington. The ranger puts down the iron pot and swiftly leads you into the tower, where you're brought face to face with the leader of the ranger outfit, a tall, lanky man named Jorund. Jorund said he's proud to know the ranks of Tysha's border rangers have been so justly complimented by someone of your extraordinary skill and legendary stature. Several of the rangers under the command step forward and meet you in shoulder crosses, while telling you it is an honour to have made your acquaintance. Now, presumably, this scenario plays out just a little bit differently if you haven't joined the Border Rangers Guild. Presumably, that's an option that many people have taken. But I don't recall ever taking it myself, because I usually put off this scenario for quite a while, because it's very, very hard. Yaron tells you that he and his regiment of rangers have recently arrived here to man the outpost and attempt to rid the area of an increasing number of highwaymen that sprung up over the last few years. You ask the leader of the rangers about the goblins you heard about in Wild Hollow, and then later encounter on the road. He shakes and shrugs, as if none of what you've said surprises him. Bolder by the day, he says, sighing. It won't be as long until they're as common as bandits, of course. We'll have just a bit to say about it before that comes to pass. Over a steaming bowl of venison stew and several unappealing mouthfuls of strong, bitter ale, you speak at length with Jorund, swapping tales of your recent exploits for stories about the deadly battle he and his men wage in the wilds of the kingdom. When at last you're ready to turn in, Jorund asks you where you'd like to sleep. There's an empty room halfway up the tower, or you can find a spot amongst the others in the long room out back, he says, stifling a long yawn.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
We keep a tight watch, so you can rest easy tonight. The thought of a worry three and restful night's sleep is more than you'd hope for when the day dawned. So I've got two options. Choose to sleep alone in the tower room, or choose to sleep in the long building with the others. Once again, I shall turn to random.org to tell me what to do, because there doesn't seem to be any, there's nothing that suggests any either of the routes is better than the other. So once again, generate number one. Looks like I'm sleeping alone. You find the unoccupied tower room directly off the stairwell on the third floor of the tower. The door is ajar, and you step into the small chamber and discover a small pile of fur blankets and several large sacks stuffed with leaves. While you're arranging the makeshift bed, eagerly anticipating deep sleep you hope to fall into, you spot a small iron-banded wooden chest tucked away into a shadowy corner of the room. You examine the chest and discover it's not locked. Well, let's have a look then. But wait a minute. Well, I guess I can have a look. Open the chest. Inside the chest, you find a small collection of crudely sketched maps which are of no conceivable use. Well, to me, presumably they were of lot use to the people, to the border rangers who live here. So that's presumably why they're there. However, at the bottom of the chest, rests in the clay cloth pouch, you discover a small number of gold tokens and a large sparkling amulet. The large sapphire, surrounded by a thick frame of gold, seemed to perpetually sparkle. So it can take the gold or the amulet, or just leave them where they are. Now, presumably, if this is here, it presumably belongs to a border ranger. I mean, it could have been left there by the previous occupants of the tower. And, well, in which case, they have far stronger claim than I do to presumably sell it to, you know, fund themselves for a bit, because I presume they're pretty much perpetually underfunded and understaffed. Just because there's just so much stuff they've got to do. Leave them where they are and close the chest. With no desire to take something that doesn't belong to you, you close the chest lid and turn your attention to getting a good night's sleep. Surprisingly comfortable, lying atop the leaf-stuffed sacks, and quite warm beneath three layers of fur, you quickly drift off to a deep, peaceful slumber, picking a number. Bonus of 139. 19 from thievery, 20 from aura, 100 from luck. So it's a very luck-centric check. Now you've got to get 75 or more, something bad will happen, presumably. Pick now. 206, success. You wake with a start. A violent tremor runs through the floor of the chamber, and a large chunk of stone falls from the wall to your left, missing your foot by less than a foot. Your head by less than a foot. You stagger to your feet, just as a thunderous blast erupts from somewhere outside the tower, as you gather your equipment and rush out of the room, instinctively realizing you must get out of the tower at once. Become keenly aware that the air is filled with a thin, pungent yellow smoke. You bound into the spiraling stairwell just outside the door to the small chamber, find it filled with thick, pungent, dark grey smoke, covering your mouth and nose as best you can, you leap down the steps, just as a series of white tremors run through the tower. Stone and dust rain down upon you as you sprint across the tower's main chamber on the ground floor, desperate to escape a structure that's about to collapse. Alright, time for a spring then, I guess. Picking your number, bonus of 60. 20 from agility, 20 from body, 10 from spirit, 10 from luck. Gotta get 100 or more. Pick now. 155, success. You emerge from the tower's main doors and stumble into the frigid night, grasping for air. Immediately, you're struck by a horrific scene unfolding in the darkness outside the outpost. A large band of cave goblins, their savage faces adorned with war paint, are assailing the outpost, rushing forward to engage the brave but outnumbered border rangers who are faithfully rallying to Yoren's call to arms. Suddenly, Yoren cries out in agony as an arrow embeds itself in his thigh. He staggers out of sight into the darkness, his sword raised and his call to arms still ringing above much of the din of the waging battle. A deafening rumble from behind, coupled with the powerful tremor that runs beneath your feet, causes you to instinctively run from the tower. You glance back over your shoulder as you reach the edge of the world and watch, wide eyes, as the stone tower collapses into a pile of smouldering rubble, sending a billowing cloud of choking dust up into the air. Well, good job I got out of there then. As you make your way towards the sounds of battle, you instinctively find yourself face to face with the enemy. I hope everyone else, if there's anyone else in there, they got out too. You suddenly find yourself face to face with the enemy. Two sword-wielding cave goblins, their faces adorned with ghoulish patterns of white wall paint. Step out of the gloom and block your path. The two savage humanoids brandish their blades with an extraordinary level of skill as they leap forward and attack, shrieking wildly with every cool stroke. Two painted goblin warriors, wielding their weapons with remarkable skill, the goblins viciously assail you. And they hit me somehow. Anyway, that's slain. 7 XP. You gaze down at the remains of your opponents as you pause to wipe the grime of battle from your face. A second pair of goblins emerges from the shadows and throw themselves at you in a frenzied attack. Much like the first two goblins you faced, this cool duo also appears to be master warriors. Well, I guess they wouldn't send anything else to assail a whole outpost filled with border rangers, and of course, presumably Sir Croakington if they were sent after me, which I deeply suspect. Begin combat. The enemy deals you a savage blow for 10 damage. Go into a battle wage. Hey! Leave these people out of it. Okay? You know, wait until I'm out of the outpost. And then it's just between me and you. And your many, many friends. It is slain. 7 XP. You look over the body of your foe. Take a moment to admire grim handiwork. As you step back from the goblin carcasses piled at your feet, you're suddenly confronted by three more of the vicious creatures, three painted goblin warriors. I guess their rage is so up, they're not even noticing they're all dying. Savage blow for 7 damage and slain. 7 XP. You stare down at the corpse of your opponent as you pause to catch your breath. Another trio of snarling goblins emerges from the shadows and quickly surrounds you. As you square off against the vicious sword-wielding creatures, you can hear Yorin's voice rising above the din of battle. Well, still alive, that's good. Attempting to rally his outnumbered and largely outmatched force, begin combat. Wielding their weapons with remarkable skill, the goblins viciously assail you. and I viciously assailed her back. Savage blow, 9 damage. The savage blow for 11 damage. 1 for 14, it is slain. 11 XP. You look over the corpse of your foe. You should take a moment to admire your grim handiwork. Now, if you're hearing all that glump sound, sorry about that. I mean, I would edit it out, but it's happening at the same time as we're talking, so can't really do a thing about it. And also, that would like involve me putting in effort. I don't do that, though. I don't actually do that much. With the battle still raging all about you and the smoking wounds of the toppled outpost, you're about to rush to the aid of a lone border ranger who's been engaged by 3 goblins when you suddenly find yourself confronted by a snarling, axe-wielding goblin warrior, brandishing his double-bladed axe with masterful skill. The cruel, yellow-eyed humanoid leaps forward. Suddenly, the goblin hurls out a smouldering earthenware vessel and hurls the deadly bomb at you. Got some options here. Use fortification, telekinesis, or elementalism, or requiring 60 plus, which I easily have, or just dodge the goblin bomb. Random.org, tell me what to do. Number 2, so telekinesis. Succeeded. 16 XP to telekinesis. You channel your power of telekinesis and project a formidable blast of telekinetic energy at the hurtling goblin bomb, striking it squarely on the wobbling nose and driving it well off its original mark. The crude but deadly explosive device strikes the ground several yards to your left and detonates, sending a shower of stone and earth raining down on you, but hopefully more of them on the goblins. With no sign of the goblin bomb hurler to be had, you turn to your right and quickly survey the battle that rages throughout the smouldering ruins of the outpost. You count 3 fallen border rangers above the dead that litter the dark, rubble-strewn battlefield. In the distance, visible only against the blinding column of grey smoke, you spot the hulking silhouettes of 2 ogres, the fearsome shapes of the 2 brutal equipped creatures. Creatures disappear swiftly into the gloom. You're about to rush forward and aid the 2 rangers that are struggling to fight their way out of a ring of sword-wielding goblins when 2 of the vicious humanoids leap out of the darkness and attack. The axe-wielding cave goblins brandish their deadly weapons with unnervingly high levels of skill as they swiftly close in. 2 painted goblin warriors. And they fight like the rest of them. I go into a battle rage and then slay it. 7 XP. You gaze down upon the remains of your enemy as you pause to examine your grim handiwork. 2 more armoured, painted goblins burst out of the gloom to your left and throw themselves at you in a frenzied attack. 2 painted goblin warriors begin combat, wielding their weapons with remarkable skill. The goblins viciously assail you, and I even more viciously assail them. Savage blow for 12 damage, and then 1 for 9. They are slain. 7 XP. You gaze down upon the corpse of your enemy, so you take a moment to wipe the sweat from your brow. 3 sword-wielding goblin warriors leap out of the darkness and quickly surround you. As you step forward to engage the menacing trio, the unmistakable and blood-curdling cry of a human falling in battle reaches your ears. 3 painted goblin warriors taking revenge for this person I don't even know. Here we go, and slain. There's a couple of specials in there. Same as the specials before. You look over the corpse of the enemy, take a moment to wipe the sweat from your brow. Just Sir Croakington sweat? Well, if Sir Croakington as a toad doesn't sweat, she didn't do that. a goblin smaller than the others you encountered, and whose face bears no paint, steps out of the shadows and hurls a flaming earthenware vial directly at you. You immediately recognise the crude incendiary device to be a goblin bomb. You only have a split second to act. My options are fortification, telekinesis, elementalism, or dodge. I got a roll of 3, so elementalism. Succeeded. 16 XP to elementalism. You call upon your power of elementalism and watch with satisfaction and relief as a warring air elemental surges out of the dark sky and intercepts the hurtling bomb, driving it well off its original mark. The crude but deadly explosive device strikes the ground several yards to your left and detonates, sending a shower of stone and earth raining down on you. Thankful to have survived the goblin bomb, you rush towards the goblin that hurled it, eager to make certain he will never again be able to employ any of the cool devices. You're taking less than 10 steps in the direction of the fleeing goblin, where your pursuit is brought to an abrupt end. A towering ogre, clad in black chain, his knotted fists clamped tightly around the haft of a heavy wooden club, steps into your path and levels his fearsome weapon at your head. You warily assume a combat-ready stance as you prepare to face the mighty creature in a fight to the death. It's an armoured ogre. Begin combat. The chain-clad ogre smashes at you with his spiked club. Devastating blow for 22 damage. Got quite a lot of health, this one. Keep going. Bashy. And slain. 9 XP. 2 spear-wielding goblins, their shrieking battle cries rising into the air, charge out of the smoky gloom and attack. 2 painted goblin warriors begin combat. Wielding their weapons with remarkable skill, the goblins viciously assail you, and I shall more viciously assail them back, and they are slain. 7 XP. You stare down at the corpse of your opponent and take a moment to wipe the sweat grime of battle from your face. Stepping away from your carnage strewn about amidst the rubble at your feet, you attempt to catch your breath as you allow your gaze to wander the horrid scene of destruction that surrounds you. Nothing moves in the smouldering ruins of the outpost. The bodies of countless goblins lie scattered throughout the piles of smoking stone and charred wood. Sadly, however, you also count 3 ogres and 6 rangers amongst the dead. Well, probably not particularly sad about the ogres. You begin to think that no one else is alive. But just as you're about to call out to see if there are any survivors, a chilling snarl erupts from behind. You spin around to find yourself facing a new and deadly menace. There. They said you'd be the toughest of the lot, growls the fearsome, leather-clad goblin, standing a few yards from you. He wipes the back of his left hand on the front of his charred jerkin, smearing a wild streak of blood across the battered piece of armour. His words confirm your suspicions. This vicious and highly trained band of goblins is here seeking you. And apparently, once again, other people are getting hurt and killed in the way. I'll have your head and the bounty that goes with it, he shrieks, leaping forward and striking out at you with his broadsword. There was a bounty on me. None of the bandits hereabouts seem to have tried for it. Presumably because by now bandits have learnt, no, she's not worth messing with. She might look like a small toad, but she will kill you. So, painted goblin leader. Begin combat. The vicious goblin leader swipes at you with his deadly blade. Keep going, keep going. Your enemy deals you a savage blow for 12 damage. Keep going. Another savage blow for 5 damage. Smasher wallops it. Savage blow for 13, and then 19, and slain. 8 XP. A thick stream of blood seeps from the corner of the goblin chief's mouth as a hideous creature staggers and falls to the ground. The gruesome quick killer draws a final ragged breath before succumbing to death. The sound of footfalls from behind sends your heart racing, and you spin on your heels, prepared to face more of the savage humanoids, only to find Yuard approaching. The ranger leader's face is streaked with blood and sweat, and he walks with a noticeable limp. A wide gash runs the length of his white arm, but despite the nasty-looking wound, he retains a firm grip on his blood-spattered sword. "There aren't any left," he says, casting his wary gaze across the scene of devastation and carnage. "What's this? I've spoken too soon." 3 goblins emerge from behind a pile of smouldering rubble and cautiously advance on Yuard. You're about to rush to his side when you spot 4 more of the vicious creatures moving stealthily through the ruins of the outpost, their shining yellow eyes fixed on you. "Take them, Sir Crogington," he says, nodding in the direction of the 4. "Leave the others to me. Let this be the last of them." You step forward and assume a defensive stance, defiantly challenging the goblins to continue their advance, while Yuard, whose every other step is little more than a stagger, stops to face his 3 encroaching foes. The 4 goblins snarl as they close in on you, their cool array of weaponry poised in anticipation of delivering you to the grave. "Well, you first." 4 painted goblin warriors begin combat. Wielding their weapons with remarkable skill, the goblins viciously assail you. Keep going, keep going, keep going. And slain. 7 XP. You look over the body of your enemies as you take a moment to wipe the grime of battle from your face. The savage cries of the goblins engaging Yuard reach your ears, and you spin around to find the ranger surrounded by the painted fiendish humanoid. Without delay, you charge into the fray, pushing yourself on Yuard's left flank as you come face to face with 2 of his merciless assailants, 2 painted goblin warriors, wielding their weapons with remarkable skill. The goblins viciously assail you. Savage blow, 9 damage. Smasher wallops it, and slain. 7 XP. You gaze down upon the remains of your opponent. You take a moment to admire your grim handiwork. Yuard steps back from the bloody corpse of the goblin he's just slain and turns to face you. His gaze seems hollow. You sense the proud warrior Master Woodsman is struggling to fight back tears. "With all that's left," he says, his voice wavering as he stares back at the smoking, crumbling remains of the razed outpost. "These were good men, Sir Crokington. But they weren't prepared for this." You follow his gaze back into the heart of the destroyed forest and count the bodies of 7 of your Yuard's men lying amidst the shattered stone and charred, splintered timbers. There were more of them, he says, looking back towards the forest on the side of the road. "But they were nothing like the beasts that did this. They were the usual one of goblindom, small, cowardly and weak. These creatures like nothing I've ever seen." Your mind immediately turns to leave these painted goblins a creature you slew only moments before meeting up with Durand at the end of the battle. The words of the savage creature proved beyond any doubt that the goblins were sent to kill you, and somehow tracked you to this remote outpost, sitting along the lonely road, cutting through the wilds. A deep sense of guilt rises within you, as you certainly realize this is not the first time those who have found themselves in your company have become the victims of the merciless cruelty of an enemy you've yet to see, or even completely identify. As Durand wanders back to the center of the ruins, your thoughts fall upon Al, and you find yourself wondering what might have befallen him on the road to Twindmoor. Well, I'm sure, considering it's Al, whatever he bumps into, he'll be able to find some sort of way out of it. You know, using thief skills or his mysterious combat abilities. As the pale light of dawn pushes its way into the sky, driving out the deeper gloom of the previous night, the scene of the ruined outpost remains of the brutal battle assume an even more ghoulish hue. You help Durand with the grim task of recovering the bodies of his fallen rangers, and together you see that each man is given a separate and proper burial in the forest. Digging into the unyielding, half-frozen earth proves painstaking, but it is an endeavour you undertake with pride and great sadness. Durand gathers the goblin carcasses and burns them in the midst of the toppled outpost, sending a pungent column of thick black smoke billowing into the frigid and clear early morning sky. Durand, now moving with a profound limp and an accompanying grimace, makes his way over to you and manages a smile. He points up the road to north of here, grazing in the small grass, the edge of the well-travelled path of three horses. The rest of you have bolted or lie buried beneath that stone, he says, as the two of you set off to reclaim the steeds. These three have got to be among the luckiest horses around. As you approach the first horse, you're presently surprised to find it's yours. The horse you've been riding since the moment it's left its stable behind the ramshackle inn south of Twythick. It's good luck when a horse sticks with you, says Durand, who seems to be genuinely pleased you've been reunited with the animal. Mine's gone, though. Good horse she was, too. After helping Durand dress some of his more serious wounds, presumably, definitely using the power of restoration to help with that. Even though the game doesn't give you the option, I did do that. Helping Durand dress some of his more serious wounds, the lone surviving member of the Ranger Regiment tells you that he will ride north to a larger outpost 50 miles away and return here with a larger force to rebuild what the goblin onslaught has destroyed. It's plain to see the rugged warrior and Master Woodsman is deeply saddened by what has befell those under his command. And since he's not at ease about making the long trek north alone in his current condition. When he suddenly asks you go with him, your heart sinks. But you quickly tell him you're on a mission of dire importance that calls you south, and you cannot afford even the slightest delay. I understand, he says, nodding as he steps forward and meets you in a shoulder cross. I hope we might meet again, Sir Crokington. It's been my extreme honour to know you, even for such a short length of time. I wish you luck and success on your mission. With that, Durand painfully hauls himself into the saddle and rides off to the north, leaving leading the third remaining horse alone at the side of his trotting steed. Leading the third remaining horse along at the side of his trotting steed. When he's at last out of sight, you mount your horse and turn south. Under the bright, clear skies of the frigid, cheerless autumn morning, with the unsettling smell of smoke still drifting through the trees, and with the nightmarish image of the previous night still flashing through your thoughts, you warily resume your southward trek. Suddenly, as the smouldering ruins of the outpost are fading from view behind you, you are overcome by the powerful and eerie feeling that you are being watched. Your pulse quickens as your eyes scour the road and the forest in all directions, desperately seeking anything to neither confirm nor allay the fear that suddenly gripped you. Then, swiftly as it rose, the feeling subsides, leaving you at ease, but mindful that despite your ability to effectively fend for yourself, you are, as is your wont, quite alone as you move through this desolate corner of the kingdom. And that ends this scenario for 2,024 experience to general and 256 experience for all skills and powers. And that's just for I got more experience for just this one scenario than I got for finishing the entire one of the earlier proving grounds. That's just slight uptick in experience all round. Anyway, next one is the Path to Cardassian Part 2. And since we've already passed an hour, and I remember that's a rather chunky scenario, also I sort of just scanned the wiki as well. It's a very chunky scenario, so I'm definitely not going to do that right now. So, until then, farewell, fellow adventurers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.